So the fear and the doubt that is produced by grasping, the unbelief that it can be any other way than the way that we perceive it. This is what binds people to samsara. And it's what binds us to rebirth. Because we keep doing and thinking the same thing over and over and over and over again. The Buddha Dharma teaches that this way of looking, while under the best circumstances, it can be sometimes interesting, attractive, and exhilarating, inevitably leads to suffering, because the illusions that one cherishes in order to maintain it are constantly out of harmony with the way that things are. Which makes you ask the question, how are things really? What is the way that things are? What are they really like? The sutras teach us that tathāta, which is the true nature of each and everything, this is what we call Buddha nature. The true nature of all things, tathāta, is seen with the mind of Bodhi, with the mind that is awakening to enlightenment. A mind which is awakening sees this. But tathāta is a very elusive concept for many people, as is Buddha nature. And even the great saints do not spend all of their time in transcendent experiences. So there has to be some everyday training for everybody. What does that look like then? You know, how do you understand or come into contact with or approach, or access, or recognize the way that things really are in everyday life? What do you look for? What do you look at? If one is practicing in the teaching of the awakening of faith, the mindful recollection of the fundamental, in order to awaken and deepen faith, what exactly are you recollecting? What are you being mindful of? What are you paying attention to? The three aspects of existence. If something is, it has what are called the three characteristics or the three marks. And these marks are dukkha, anicca, anatta. What the three marks teach, what they are pointing to, where they are leading you, if you pay attention to them in as minute detail as you can, is the mind of non-abiding. Non-abiding. Don't grasp, don't push away anything that has the three marks. And above all, remember that whatever is characterized by the three marks is not the true refuge. If you take refuge in something that is characterized by the three marks, suffering is inevitable. So you practice non-abiding. Don't hold on, don't push away. Study the recollection that everything is marked by dukkha. Pay attention to the three marks as they arise. And you can do this consciously by being mindful as often as you care to be, by simply observing clearly what is going on right in front of you at any moment, and what is going on right inside of you at any moment. This is what helps you to stay anchored in the fundamental. It is an attitude, the attitude of recollective mindfulness. You notice what's going on, you pay attention to it because it's telling you something. It's telling you, don't take refuge here. Practice non-abiding. Whether you like it or you don't like it. It can communicate two aspects, the aspect of suffering and the aspect of liberation. And it will be up to you and how you recollect and how you observe it, which aspect you will take in. It is very clear to all of us that there is no refuge in dukkha. In Buddhism, dukkha is traditionally regarded as birth, aging, disease, and death. It is also being separated from what we desire, forced to be with what we avoid, not getting what we want, and everything else. But one of the interesting things about dukkha is that it not only means suffering, which is the traditional translation of it, it also means non-satisfactory. Something that does not bring lasting or permanent peace. If you recollect that everything is marked by dukkha, that everything has the mark of dukkha upon it in some way, whether you can see it or not, you won't be grasping after it, or you will be much less likely to grasp after it. Or if you do grasp after it, you will be less likely to hold it for too long. Just pay attention to it and just study it. Here in this thing, in this event, there is dukkha. And I can enter into and create this dukkha if I want, or I can allow this thing, this event, this experience to teach me how to become free. And it's up to me. Don't grasp the pleasant aspects of it. Don't push away the unpleasant aspects. You just look at it and you study it. Your own feelings, your own reactions teach you where you're trying to hold on and where you need to let go. Because if we are holding on to something really tightly because we want it, or we are pushing something away really energetically because we don't want it, our peace of mind is deeply disturbed by that. And yet if we can look at that, we can look at it in a completely different way. Just look. Look at what is in front of you. Look at what is within your own experience. Even if you lived by yourself on a cliff or on a boat with nobody else around you, you would see the appearance of dukkha. Where is that coming from? It comes from us. It is our attitude. It is something that can teach us to suffer. It is something that can teach us to free ourselves. It's all a question of abiding or non-abiding. It's very simple and easy. But the problem is, or the challenge is, that it will challenge the very way in which you define yourself. Because one of the mechanisms that we use to define ourselves are the things that we like and the things we dislike. Aversion and grasping. And if we just look at things without aversion or without grasping, what do we see? Just look. Recently, somebody asked me how to pay attention to impermanence. What do you pay attention to? You can pay attention to anything. You can pay attention to everything. When they said that to me, and in contemplating it, the thought I have is to lean over and look in the mirror and contemplate impermanence. You know, our hair is gray, or it's going to get grayer, or it's a certain color, but it's not the same color it was 10 years ago, and it's going to be a different color in 10 years. Or you can't see it because we've colored it. Or you can see it and we've got to color it. Or it's not there. Or you need a haircut. Or what? Whatever it is, it's telling you that it's not permanent. You look at your eyes, your face, the structure. You look at anything, and it's not just us, it's everything. Look at the bathroom. Look at the house. Look at your friends. look at your dog, cat, spouse, place, anything. Everything is impermanent. Nothing remains the same. Whatever your attention focuses on, it is not permanent. Because it is not permanent, don't take refuge there. Don't grasp it. Don't push it away. Just look at it and see it. Whatever it is, it's going to pass it away. Whatever it is. See the aspects of it and let it go. If it's good, be grateful for it. And don't try to hold it. And if it's bad, learn from it. Don't try to hold it. It will pass. This can be really good news if something very bad happens and we don't like it, that all things are impermanent. And it can be very bad news if we do like it, that all things are impermanent. But things are just as they are. And they express themselves through these marks. There is no abiding here. Nothing is permanent. Everything is flowing. Impermanence is constantly expressing itself. We tend to look at everything with the attitude of a guarantee of permanence. And in fact, nothing is permanent. Even when it's, quote, new or just created, it is impermanent. Because that moment of newness or just creation is one place in a web of causal relations that is ever changing. Nothing is permanent except the true nature of all things. And we can only see that if we accept that everything is impermanent. This is why Dogen said impermanence is Buddha nature. In the Shishogi, Dogen also said, "This body is not my own. Life, which is controlled by time, never ceases for an instant. My own body does not belong to me." I went to my doctor 2 days ago, and he said, "You are disgustingly healthy." And both of us were happy, and I am grateful for as long as it lasts, because it will not last. Because this is dukkha. This is impermanent. And this is not I, me, mine. It does not belong to us, and we have no control over it. We have some control. It's not our real nature. We think of these things in terms of, we think of the I, the me, the mine. These are relationships They're not reality. And they're not refuge. If we make any of them a refuge, we create and intensify suffering. No matter how good my sight is, it's going to go. No matter how good my brain is, it's going to go. No matter how long my life is, it's going to go. No matter how much I excel in one thing, it will diminish. If we make something a refuge, we create and intensify suffering. We decide to abide in something where, in reality, there's no abiding here. You can do so many things, and you can have so many experiences. But the Buddha Dharma is teaching, don't abide there. And remember the three marks. And watch for them. Because when you watch for them and your eyes are open for them, just by observing, they will tell you, don't abide. Just learn, let go, move on. This is how we become mindful of the fundamental. Holding on to, abiding in anything as a refuge, as permanent as oneself, it intensifies fear and doubt, and it's what binds us to samsara, to birth and death. Letting go, not abiding in self or things as a refuge, as permanent as oneself, engenders faith, and it liberates us. And even maybe can cause us to realize nirvana? Well, maybe, if we don't hold on to it. This is it. Now I got it. What have we got? Whatever we got, that sounds like mine. I haven't seen the three marks. My nirvana. If we do not grasp at life or death, or avoid life or death, we do not abide within life and death. Even though we are born, we age, we become sick, and we die. Dogen told us to find the Buddha within birth and death. Don't try to escape birth and death. Don't try to grasp after nirvana. Do not abide in anything. Okay, this is the basis of training. It is the basis of non-attachment. It's how you learn to live in the world as if in the sky. It's how you learn to treat everything and everyone as sacred. Because when you really recognize what things are, by relinquishing the idea that about everything is related to me and I am the center of the universe, or relinquishing the idea of grasping or avoiding, you just see things as they are. And everything becomes the means to teach you the truth. Everything is sacred. The truth is constantly manifesting itself. And one of the saddest things about, which seems to be a characteristic of samsara, is that people are not mindful of this. When I was about 15 years younger, I had the opportunity for the first time in my monastic life, it was the only time in my monastic life, as a matter of fact, to do a one-month retreat at a forest hermitage. And I was alone by myself in the Northern California forest in a house during the winter, and had the opportunity to make my own schedule and do a lot of meditating. And I threw myself into it with zeal and was getting up, you know, 3 or 4 in the morning and meditating and as much as I wanted to, and, you know, was able to stop and make tea and go back and meditate more and eat as little or as much as I felt I needed to. And I was able to do some work around the place. And in the afternoon, I would take walks. And at our forest hermitage in those days, there was a little creek that flowed at the bottom of the valley that we were in. And I used to walk along the creek. I put on special pants that didn't allow water in, waterproof pants and waterproof boots. And for some strange reason, and I don't know why, the water was freezing cold. But with the pants and the boots, I didn't feel the cold. I would just walk up the stream and just look at things. You know, look at the trees, look at the rocks, look at the water. And one day I was walking along, and this area had been the a place where there had been a tremendous amount of logging that went on. And there were many old growth redwood trees that had been cut down in this area. So you had these huge stumps. And I was walking along the creek, and the perspective changed slightly. And I was, you know, walking along, and suddenly I realized that I was walking on what had once been the root system of a redwood tree. And it was a very wide area, maybe 8 feet by 10 feet by 12 feet. And it was like a lattice work that spread out over this creek. And the as I say, it was winter time, and the openings in between the roots, because the roots were just running like this, were frozen, and there were sheets of ice on it. And you could see I was standing on this root system with ice frozen in all the openings, and the creek was running underneath the ice and underneath the roots. And you could see the water rushing by from the creek washing up against the ice. And as I stood out there, I was looking at it, and I realized that I had chanced upon something that would never come again. It would never appear in exactly that way. It was beautiful. It was unique. The water was frozen in exactly the way it was frozen. The water was rushing by in the way it was rushing by. The redwood roots looked as if they had been carved by a master wood carver. And there I was standing on it and just looking at it. It was not a huge spiritual experience. But it was one of those things that if you were a nature lover, it's one of those times that you would really cherish. because you know that it will never happen this way again. And in fact, I have not, until since that day, been able to do another retreat or be in that place in the same way again. But I remembered. And in remembering, and given subsequent experiences in training, that experience taught me a lot about the meaning of non-abiding and what that means and what the mindful recollection of the fundamental, where it leads to and what it opens the door to. I am always asked about how you practice intensive training while living in the world, how you practice non-attachment. And the way in which you do this is by paying as close attention as you can to the three marks. And in fact, you can pay close attention to any one of them, and they will also express this same thing to you. If you just look at dukkha and look at all the aspects of dukkha, paying close attention by just looking with an open mind and seeing, or impermanence, or how everything is not your own. This is how, as I was saying, the awakening of faith teaches us to mindfully recollect the fundamental. But it also brings us to an understanding of something. Everything, every experience, is an expression of and a doorway to truth. Zen Master Dogen talks about in his writings that everything abides in a Dharma position. I mentioned this at the beginning. When something abides in a Dharma position, it means that place, that position, is unique unto itself. It is unique, it is discreet, and it is at the same time one with everything around it. The example that he used in his writings was of firewood, which becomes ashes. And he talks about wood becomes ashes. It does not again become wood. And it's one of the things that you read 1,000 times and you go along, right, wood becomes ashes, it does not again become wood. Okay, I got that. But he's talking about something more than that. That moment everything being unique, everything being distinct, everything being just the way it is, that moment never comes again. And if it does, it comes in a different way. The experience of a single thing, of any single thing, of anything in your own experience, is the total experience of everything. Everything is expressed in a single moment and in a single thing. And at the same time, it is completely free. And it is empty of individual aspects. We sometimes are able to catch this when you see a leaf falling from a tree, or you're looking at a burning piece of firewood, and all of a sudden the chunk falls off. Wood becomes ashes. It does not again become wood. That which is in a tree becomes that which is in the ground. In springtime, that leaf is gone. It doesn't fly back up into the tree. It's gone. It's unique. It's distinct. And yet that falling of the leaf, or the dropping off of the chunk of wood, is the very expression of everything in that single event. And your own life and your own mind is the complete and total expression of your own Buddhahood at every moment. It is the contemplation or the recollection of dukkha, of anicca, of anatta, of looking at that which is not satisfactory, without the filters of holding it on or pushing it away, without the filters of identity or definition, that brings you to the point where you can see what is in front of you. It is the willingness to look at impermanence in all of its aspects, which gives you the opportunity to see what that truly means. And it is the recollection of, or the contemplation of, anatta, of that, of recognizing that there is nothing that we can call I, me, or mine, that brings us again to the doorway of our true nature. Because Buddha nature, Tathāta, manifests itself in everything, at every moment, in every experience, all the time. And we are in, when you are training in the way and you're practicing, you begin to see the Dharma position that you are in, along with everything else. It is not an intellectual condition. It's not a formula. It's just that you recognize and you don't abide. You don't hold on. You don't push away. When you don't hold on and you don't push away, things express themselves just as they are, fully and completely. And we are one with that expression. And more than that, we know that we are one with it. The cultivation of faith brings the recognition of training, the necessity, the importance of training, and the degree to which you put yourself into it and manifest that will manifest to you that everything is the doorway to truth, and that everything you do is sacred and is an opportunity for practicing the way. Wherever you are, whatever is arising, do not hold it, don't push it away. Just look at it. Remember the three marks. Don't abide. In Dogen's teaching, he said that we do not pass from one thing to another. There is no continuity. There is simply becoming at each moment. The person who was sitting down in the abbot's house with the extension cord plugged into the wall and the generator going, I don't have anything to do with that person. Even though this is sitting in front of me, this is what's left. But the moment that we are sitting in is completely new. We do not pass from birth to death. We do not pass from life to life. Everything is completely new. It is completely unique. It has never been this way before. It will never be this way again. Life is, in this sense, timeless life. Because real life, the life of Tathāta, is not based on the clock. Death is timeless death. A person's life and death is not based on anything. It simply arises and it passes. Birth, aging, disease, death, these are timeless. And they are expressions of the three marks and teachings in non-abiding. They are the opportunity for training, and they are the spiritual context for training. They're the place in which it happens, in which it occurs, because they are the circumstances in which we all find ourselves. A person who lives in this world and who practices the Buddha Dharma is a bodhisattva in the sense, or in so much as he or she is practicing the bodhisattva path. The scripture of Brahma's Net talks about people who take the precepts as bodhisattvas who are new to training. We are fledgling bodhisattvas. We are bodhisattvas with little bees, not with big bees. By practicing the way, the bodhisattva does not abide in samsara. By not grasping after nirvana, the bodhisattva does not abide in nirvana. He or she does not pass into something that is separate from other beings. Such a being is free to work in the waveless sea for the benefit of everyone, because they are not grasping and they're not pushing away. What is it that we are taught the first time we sit down to look at a wall? Do not hold on to anything. Do not push it away. Such a person is not afraid of birth and death. These are positions in time, that they have a before and they have an after. They are also Dharma positions. They are places of training, doorways to the truth, and the way in which the truth expresses itself completely and totally. This is how and why one practices non-abiding, which is one of the skillful means that is talked about in the awakening of faith.